Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
Hey there.
I'm Hannah.
And I'm Audrey.
We are a sister filmmaking duo
and co-hosts of Sleepover Cinema.
Our show where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of the girls, gays, and theys of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Princess Diaries, The Cheetah Girls, Aquamarine, Cinderella, the one starring Brandy.
We haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them, and we want you to rewatch them
and review them with us.
Are these movies as bad as critics would have us believe?
Do we even care if they are?
We are always unpacking that very question on Sleepover Cinema.
Check out Sleepover Cinema wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcasts.com.
See you soon.
All right, dear listeners, after the last series where we talked about the horrors of the Irish famine, we thought maybe time for a little bit of a palate cleanser.
Let's do something fun.
Let's do something a little bit fun. And we thought, you know what? We'll talk about a horror movie we just watched, or I watched recently, Maria's watched before, called Nope.
Yeah. Well, and I was like, it's been a hot minute since we've talked about UFOs.
Right? It really has been.
Sort of, you know, like there hasn't been any tirades or any, you know, communiques or thought pieces coming out of us about the UFO and the UFO community. So I figured we needed to get back to the roots.
We got to get back to our roots.
Give the people what they want.
It's going to be so good. I'm so excited. So listeners, if you didn't listen to the end of the last episode, we are going to start doing a thing where basically in between full episodes, which take a lot of planning, a lot of research, a lot of editing, all that kind of stuff, we want to still do stuff like weekly. We used to release weekly. COVID happened. That all changed. We want to get back to weekly releases. We figure maybe a better way to do that, a nicer way to do that, we'll do interviews with other people. We'll do cool stories, stuff that doesn't fit into like full episodes necessarily, but we think it's still a lot of fun. So we hope you enjoy these bi-weekly episodes. And the first one here, is going to be on Nope, the film by Jordan Peele. Jake, roll the tape.
Also, we should say if you have not seen it, we will be spoiling it. Heavily here.
Yeah, definitely.
So I would recommend seeing it. I'd recommend seeing it, if at all possible, on the biggest screen you can in a theater, if you are comfortable doing so, because it's really good.
It is really good. It's so good. I thought it was so good. People online do not like it. It's a lot of them.
Really?
So good. Yeah.
So I'm a big Jordan Peele fan. I was a fan of his stand-up stuff. I loved the movie Keanu.
Yep.
Sure. I thought that was hysterical. And the kitten is, you know, it's just like, again, it's just, you know, I loved it. I loved Get Out. Loved Us. You know, any kind of when it's Twilight Zone, when he's doing a turn to horror, it's just like, oh my God, it's so much fun and it's so different. And I think one of my favorite things that I've learned about him was that he went to Sarah Lawrence, right? So this small kind of, I think it's upstate New York, right? Sarah Lawrence?
I think so, something like that,
Liberal arts, you know, school where he majored in puppetry.
So good.
I mean, if you want to talk about the one major that would freak any parent out, right? You're putting down how much money to go to some liberal arts college to begin with. And then your kid comes back and you're like, okay, well, what are you going to study? Is it going to be like, maybe it's an economics program and they're still going to squeeze, you know, an MBA out of this, or ooh, maybe we still have a shot at a law degree. And they're like, puppetry. And you're like, oh shit.
It's weird. A little weird.
But it's awesome, yeah. Right? Because it's like, basically it's this really great, creative degree. He did not ultimately graduate, I don't believe, from Sarah Lawrence. But I like to think that he took all the stuff he learned in comedy and comedy timing and went and became like this horror maestro for our generation. Like, to me, his timing and his take on horror and sort of you can just tell it's one of his films, right? Just has a distinct, to me, it has a real distinct feel and a real distinct kind of timing and kind of cadence to it that is really different, that I am starting to associate more with him and his work. Now, it's a UFO, right? It's a UFO film.
It is. It is a UFO film.
Which is great. Yeah, go ahead.
No, so the plot of the movie, if you watch any of the marketing and stuff, it looks like it's just a straight UFO movie. Mm-hmm. But it's not. Right? It's not. In fact, it uses one of the most interesting UFO theories out there, which is that UFOs themselves are physical creatures. Like, that it's not a ship, that is an animal.
It's an animal. Right?
The UFO itself is an animal.
Which, just, you know, so maybe that has a lot more scuttlebutt in your community at large, you know, and recently. But when they did that reveal, I was like, oh, come on, that's good.
I thought it was really good. No, it is really good. Well, so the other thing, so the movie, okay, so synopsis of the movie, right? A general synopsis here, yeah? Yeah. You got Otis O.J. Haywood Jr. Uh-huh. And Otis Haywood Jr., who is this father figure, the father of Otis O.J., uh-huh. and his sister, Emerald M. Haywood. Yeah. Uh-huh. They own a ranch, and the ranch is basically it raises horses and then rents them out for movies and things. Yeah.
It's like a Hollywood stunt ranch for the horses.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And the Haywoods come from their great-great-great-grandfather, who was the first person ever in a film, which is this, like a penny arcade film of a black man on a horse.
Right. The jockey.
Right. Yeah. And so, yeah. And is it called The Jockey, Marie?
I think it might be. It is a famous piece of film.
It is. It is a real famous
memorabilia
piece of cinema history,
right?
Yeah.
It's the first visual image captured on film.
Yeah.
Or one of them. The first moving, right?
Absolutely. So the story, so it starts with kind of these it actually starts with a scene where a chimpanzee is murdering a bunch of people on a film set. And you're like, what is happening here? This is crazy.
Yeah.
What's happening?
Yeah. Yeah.
And like,
isn't about UFO.
Yeah. And particularly it shows a girl, like a little girl, is being beaten to death by this chimp, and her shoe stands up on its end.
Yeah.
Like, inexplicably stands up on its end. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the violence, sort of the carnage, and you don't really see a lot because it's from the point of view of someone watching from under a table.
Yes.
Right. So you're hearing about this, you know, again, this wild animal that was being used as sort of a prop on a TV show, you know, loses its, you know, its civility.
Right? Yeah.
It's a wild animal and it attacks all these people. And so you're hearing most of it. And it is pretty, like, to me, I was pretty freaked out by that. I was like, okay, this is kind of crazy. And then the visual is just focused on this one shoe sitting upright in this really unnatural position with just like one drop of blood on it, which again is just like this weird sort of anomaly to start a film that you are assuming is going to be about UFOs with something that is so like doesn't have anything. You get that point, you're just like, what? This has nothing to do with it.
As far as you can tell, it has nothing to do with the rest of the movie.
No.
And so then The guy, OJ and his dad, are sitting on the dad's sitting on a horse. They're talking, mm-hmm. and suddenly there's like kind of a weird like disturbance, and OJ turns around and his dad is dead. His dad has had a nickel shot into his brain.
Yeah, from above.
From right? above.
He's looking around, so, and you can yeah. see that there's different like metal things hitting the ground, and there was a key that got embedded into the wood of the staircase.
And a bunch of horses they have are gone.
Right.
Right. They have right. horses on a run or a walk or whatever they call that, and they're gone.
Yes.
And so then what eventually you find out is the thing that took the horses is this UFO that OJ sees on the land. And him and his sister decide we are going to try to get a shot of this UFO.
Yeah, because basically, I mean, they're running a ranch.
A failing ranch.
A failing ranch. They are not, you know, it's almost like they're an anomaly within a sort of the Western field to begin with, you know. So, but if you need a horse, they can be taken to the film sets. But even that, it's like, you know, CG is basically
taking
all of that away from them. So they've got to do something. They want to keep the ranch. And so they decide, hey, what if we get this thing on film? Whatever this is, what if we get it on film?
And what it turns out they keep trying and bad stuff keeps happening. Right. It doesn't work.
But you're missing one of my absolute favorite parts of this movie that I have tweeted about. It to get the stuff that they are going to use, to buy all the stuff that they are going to use to get this thing on film, they go to probably the best, absolute best, now defunct, bankrupt electronic store known to the human kind, Fry's Electronics.
Which I had not heard about until you were like, this is a real place. It's awesome.
Oh my God. So I'm just going to just take a quick moment and talk a little bit about Fry's, because Fry's is insane. It was, again, like these huge stores that were called Fry's Electronics. And each one of them were branded slightly differently. So there's one, I think it's in Woodland Hills, that is sort of like Alice in Wonderland themed. And so you go in and there's the caterpillar sitting on the mushroom, you know, and it's like oversized sculpture of it, right? The one that they used for this was in Burbank. And I've actually been to it. And they used it. They've used, I think, the one in Burbank a few different times. I think they used it in Mr. Robot as well. And the theme of it is outer space. So there is a saucer, a flying saucer that has crashed in front of the Fry's Electronics. Now, maybe you're thinking to yourself, why is theming important to Fry's Electronics? It's not. It's just what they decided to do.
It's just kind of a weird
thing. Huge stores. And the thing is it's like if you were an engineer or if you were a computer geek, or they had all these individual components, like rows and rows of individual components. But then if you were like, hey, you know what? I should pick up a calendar. They had rows and rows of like kitty and puppy calendars. And then you're like, oh man, you know what? I could use a snack. Most of them had cafes. Like, it was insane the amount of offerings that they had at Fry's Electronics. And it felt like when you went in there, at least towards the end, that you're going into this sort of Soviet era, like almost like a gulag. Like, it's just really quiet. It's really dark. Everyone who works there is just really like, welcome to Fry's Electronics. Can I help you?
It's funny, right? Because I think one of the big themes about this movie, right, is like mm-hmm. exploitation, right? It's exploitation of animals, exploitation of tragedy, exploitation of the unknown, the religious. Like it's a movie about if this movie has any theme, it is exploitation. And
yes,
you find that. I think Fry's Electronics honestly kind of fits that too, right? It's this like they're exploiting these like weird things, or you know, it's just spectacle, right? It's just weird. Like it's just, you know, you go into a store, like what's the difference between Fry's Electronics and like Walmart down the road? Well, Fry's Electronics has got a giant Roman statue out front for some reason. You know what I mean? Like, there's no reason for it. It's different. It's just different for the sake of being different.
It's different, and it's like, but it was really an anomaly. And listeners, if you've been into a Fry's Electronics, you know that, because it's like, they had perfume, they had toys, they had Game Boys, they had like all this huge gamut of stuff, so much so that you just really didn't know what you wanted when you got in there. Like, if all you were doing was going in there to get some sort of a battery or something like that, right? You just walk in and it was almost like you were on drugs, because you were just like, what, where are we?
Right. What
Maybe
else am
I'll
I getting?
Just get myself a Reuben sandwich at the cafe, right? Which is crazy. Like, why do they have a cafe and an electronics store? So it's this really perfect callback, because they did go bankrupt and they closed all of the stores. But it's this perfect kind of,
it's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, this callback moment to something that doesn't make a lot of sense, except to maybe a certain group of people. And you can see Jordan Peele kind of geeking out, like people really on his, you know, that worked on this movie clearly have this affinity for it and geeked out about it. And they're walking through there, right, when they're picking up the stuff. And this is when they meet Angel, who inevitably will set up the stuff. You know, and they're eating the Twizzlers, right? They're starting to go through the candy aisle and they're eating the Twizzlers. And they're talking about what they're going to need to get this whatever it is on film.
Mm-hmm. It captures the feeling of being in like a big store like that too, right? Which is so cool.
Yes.
So we are then introduced to Jupe, the kid who was in the chimpanzee show called Gordy's Home.
Right.
Who witnessed and whose eyes were looking through when we see the beating and the murder happen. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so he is a child actor who was on the show Gordy's Home after being in a show about like a Western kind of kid show, whatever. And or a kid's movie, I guess. And Gordy's Home was this like super successful sitcom at the time that had this chimpanzee actor. And during a scene where they're shooting for Gordy's birthday, balloons go off and Gordy freaks out and like rips the face off of his young co-star. Yeah. Not Jupe, this girl that's there.
Right.
And then Jupe goes and runs and hides underneath a table. And an actor comes down and is like, whoa, Gordy, like, stop it. What are you doing? And Gordy murders that guy, too.
Right.
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 And then comes over to Jupe and tries to give him like a fist bump, because that's like their signature thing, is they do an exploding fist bump. And he goes to try to do it. And then they shoot Gordy in the head.
I know.
You know, to kill him.
Yeah,
which is that's like probably the scariest scene in the movie, I would say. And then
it was, yeah, because again, most you're hearing it.
And so we're told about, yeah, the noises of Gordy like eating the girl's face. Pretty rough.
No, well, you guys screaming and calling him by not his real name. Like the fact that, you know, you're still using this fictitious name, Gordy, for this animal, right?
Yeah.
And how you learn about this is it's being told in a kind of like a flashback by Jupe present day.
Yeah. He explains to the Haywoods, or the sister and the brother, that he like charges money for people to like see the memorabilia from the show. And he's got the shoe still standing upright in his room. Like, you know, he turns this like really horrible experience basically into the career for the rest of his life. He becomes like, you know, the guy who was on Gordy's Home, right? Who saw the chimpanzee eat the girl's face and like even brings her to the park to like bring her out in front of people. Right. So again, exploitation, right?
Yeah. Well, it's just what's so weird about. So why is he's out in the desert there. He runs sort of this theme park, this terrible Western theme park called Jupiter's Claim, right? Which is where, you know, the Haywoods are
selling their horses
to him for reasons that he doesn't understand. And it's so like, you know, OJ is like, I'm going to try and buy the horses back, you know, which is just heartbreaking in another way. But yeah, so you have this guy who basically, you can tell when he's recalling this stuff, is still like seriously traumatized by this event that happened to him as a child, as well he should be, but hasn't processed it. Like, that was one of the things that I thought was kind of the most interesting parts of that movie, is like, you've got this guy who has, you know, like this, like you said, a secret stash of, you know, that people can come and look at it, and he charges him for it. And he's kind of laughing it off. Like, oh, it was really funny when Chris Kattan, you know, was played Gordy for the, you know, Saturday Night Live
skit. An SNL skit about the murder of these people.
Murder, you know, and you're just sort of like, oh, and it's, it's Steve Yeun who plays Jupiter, who was in The Walking Dead, who's Glenn, right? In The Walking Dead. So he's a great actor. And you just kind of feel like this weird tension or this weird, I don't know, like not artificiality, but like this dude's not well.
No, he's clearly again. Well, what's, you know, it's interesting because he shows such hubris throughout the movie. Like everyone shows hubris throughout the movie, right? It's all, that's the other thing I think that's so nice, or not nice, but the thing that I really kind of felt watching it was like, because one thing you get when you watch these shows about, like, you know, Skinwalker Ranch or any of these other things, right?
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I always feel is, like, you think, supposedly legitimately, you think that this ranch is a portal to extraterrestrial or extra-dimensional intelligences who seem to have the powers of, like, angels at the very least and God at the highest levels.
Yeah.
And you're... plan for this location is to turn it into a television show.
Yeah.
Right? Like the hubris of that, the exploitation of that, right? It's like, you have a statue of the Virgin Mary that's crying blood and you decide to bottle the blood and sell it. Right?
Kind of, so like you're messing with something you should not be messing with.
And it's just like, it's just gross. It seems like such a, if you really believe it's true, it seems like such a, again, like a gross thing to do, right?
Yeah.
And in the movie, what ends up kind of happening is so OJ and M, his sister, are working with Angel now to try to get a shot of the UFO.
Right, and Angel is the guy who...
From Fry's Electronics.
From Fry's Electronics. Who's into ancient like aliens. Geek Squad.
Yeah, he's like super into aliens. It was so funny.
I thought that was just funny.
Steven Yeun comes over and says, like, hey, I'm inviting you guys to this like special event we're doing on the ranch. And it turns out the special event is Jupe is going to call the UFO down to eat a horse.
I don't know if he knows that they're being eaten.
To take them up.
So basically,
He doesn't know what's happening, but it's like,
right?
He's going to have the UFO perform for them. And again, you're like, dude, this already happened with the chimp. Don't do it again, right? Learn your lesson, goddammit. Like, you can't control these things.
And I think the one person who I feel like had learned their lesson at the very beginning of this was OJ, right?
Yeah, again, absolutely.
Who is Daniel Kaluuya's character, who now owns this ranch after he saw this weird thing happen to his dad, and he's still trying to process it and process what happened to it. But he kind of has his basic rules in place, like you don't look at an animal in the eyes. Right. You have a way of working with something, you know, a wild animal, but you're not going to directly engage them in that kind of conflict because they could be territorial. So he has this sense about stuff. Right. And it's
he has respect for.
Yes.
This thing. Yeah. Right. That no one else is showing respect for.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. And I think like this respect and this understanding and like this, he's able to navigate it, and he's looking at it, and he's the one who puts it together, like, hey, maybe this thing is not craft, maybe it's a thing, maybe it's an animal, maybe it's what we're seeing is actually an animal, and it's not just like, you know, maybe just beaming up these horses, you know, to be taken off to another, you know, probed or whatever, it's eating them. Like, I think he puts that together before anybody else does.
He totally does.
But his sister, I think, too, is like M is more. It's the same. I looked at it as very similar. Like she just had sort of a different viewpoint, but she got it really quickly. Right. Like she'd been on the outside of the ranch, you know, and she hadn't had as much as much attention paid to her by her dad. Right. And so she, you know, is coming back to the ranch and trying to make things work. But again, she gets it really quickly. Like, oh, if we can get a picture of this thing, you know, we have Oprah money, right? It's going to be the Oprah show.
Well, so that's the what eventually then happens. So Jupiter decides he's going to try to do this show.
Yeah.
The creature comes and eats everyone at the show. Eats all,
sucks them up, right?
And then spits them out on top of the Haywoods' home. So it's like raining blood and metal and whatever,
which is insane.
And so they decide then to call the creature Jean Jacket after a horse that they couldn't tame earlier in their lives. And so they finally get like someone to come and take a video of it and whatever and all this other stuff. And again, the moral of the story seems to be like, respect this creature. You know, the only reason that they stay alive throughout is they're like, don't look it in the eye, which is the black thing that looks like the bottom of the ship that's beaming people up. They're like, don't look it in the eye.
Right.
It's territorial. Give it its space. The best you can hope to do is kind of move the animal, but you can't like control it. Right. Like, it's like it's like working with any kind of animal. Right. Or whatever. Like, you know, with, even with like cows. Right. Very docile kind of domesticated creatures. You don't like get
shit out of you.
Well, like besides that, like you don't really get like you kind of have to coax cows to do stuff. Right? You don't tell a cow like, hey, you're going down that chute. You're like, you designed the chute in such a way that the cow decides to go down it on its own, or you know what I mean? So it's like,
right.
That's why I think really, again, like the real central theme for me, at least, was, again, like hubris and exploitation, right? Thinking that you could control something that you don't understand, that you have no claim over at all or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then exploitation of that thing that, you know, you can use it in a way to make money. And again, even like Steven Yeun, right? His whole thing is like exploiting the terrible events of Gordy's home for his future career.
Right.
And even the Haywoods kind of do a little bit of that themselves, right? They're like, well, we're going to exploit this creature to make money off of it in some way or whatever. Yeah. But that's the thing. The end of the film is go ahead.
Let me ask you this. So what did you think of the creature reveal? Because they finally get to, you know, just to kind of get to it, they finally get a part where they're like, okay, they've got the attention of the creature. Right. And then it starts off as a, you know, as your standard flying saucer shape, right? It's the oval shape, and then it has the black hole in the bottom of it, the perfect black hole, which is what stuff was beamed up. But all of a sudden it changes shape. And I was blown away by that. Like, I was like, of course, that's so amazing.
It becomes like a giant jellyfish almost, but geometric. So like the eye goes from being a circle on the bottom of the ship, it kind of like folds in on itself and becomes like, I think he was trying to give visions of like four dimensional, higher dimensional creatures in a three dimensional space, right?
Yeah.
So like the eye is a cube within a cube, basically, that is shifting constantly color down the length of the cube eye to this black center.
Right.
That's very like classic four dimensional image in a three-dimensional space, right? That's like the image of like what a hypercube, quote unquote, looks like, right? It's a four-dimensional, if you were to say, what do they call it, like if you were to transpose a cube, a three-dimensional space, into two dimensions, you'd end up with a cross. Right. So it's basically the same idea. How would you get a four-dimensional hypercube to transpose into three dimensions?
I didn't even catch that.
It's a cube within a cube with all corners and axes touching simultaneously or something like that. Right. That's it's like insane. It's super complicated, right? Yeah. It's like a very weird, but so that's what that reminded me of when the eye was like that. I was like, oh shit.
When it's blinking, when it's going like that.
Exactly. When it's like,
That green, the green eye is the same green background as the film that they showed the jockey.
Oh, that's super. I didn't even catch that.
Yeah. At the very beginning of the film, they open with the jockey. And then it becomes this other thing, this, you know, this cube within a cube, which you don't really know what that is yet. But it is, the jockey is on the same background.
And actually, I wouldn't be surprised if the shifting the black color didn't also hit the same time signature time sequence. as the movement. Yeah,
I bet it did.
It's so interesting.
I bet that would be fascinating to figure out, because man, that was when that thing unfurled. It was like, it looked like the Man of War.
Jellyfish. Yeah, it looks like a giant jellyfish. Yeah, it's super interesting.
And it was like, but it was super scary. Like, to me, I was terrifying in some ways, because it's like, you just don't know what the hell that thing is, or how it's functioning, or like,
yeah,
and it, but, or how it's well, still
it's,
seen.
It's like those descriptions of angels, right? Like the, you know,
it
cube
is,
or the circle within a circle within a circle of eyes or whatever, right? Like this weird, yeah,
it
like
it is. So yeah. they hit on that, and then they there was a lot from anime, right? I know, but she did the Akira. Like they had some with the Akira with the motorcycle.
Oh yeah, she does the Akira slide. Yeah, she does the Akira slide to look at the. Yeah, it's so funny.
If these are your frames of reference, popular culture, you know that's exactly where they got that from. And the alien people were saying was also from another. Evangelion. What is that? Is that, I think it's from Evangelion. Is the angel from Evangelion?
Oh, Evangelion.
Yes.
Yeah, Evangelion rather.
Yeah, sorry. Yes.
No. That's interesting. I mean,
and it's just that. Again, like, to me, it's like on a pure.
Oh, because Evangelion has the scary angels that are like the giants. Yep. That's super interesting. Oh, that's so weird. I didn't even put that together. It's so cool.
It's the so one cool thing. Because, like, again, if you're like a pop culture geek. Right. You see all these things and you don't like in the moment, you might not recognize what they are. But like later on that day, I was like, oh, that was what that was from, you know. But as soon as I saw the jean jacket all unfurled, I'm like, oh, my God, they just went with which is, of course, that's what an alien would look like to me. Like, you know, they rip on sort of the more classic version of this is what an alien looks like, which is the little dude, you know, with the big eyes.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah.
And well, so they kind of cap on that, which I think is pretty funny, you know.
Well,
but it's like when you see something that is that alien, that's my guess is like if there is something out there like it, it's going to be more like that than anything else.
Well, so the thing I thought about. That I thought was so funny was they have this like cinematographer, this guy that's like, you know, shooting things of animals eating people or whatever.
Yeah.
They hint a lot that it's an animal before they reveal that, like, oh shit, this is an animal.
Yeah.
The one of the things that guy says is they're eating dinner before they're going to do the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he says it was a one-eyed, one-armed flying purple people eater. And I was like, oh shit. Because I remember when I was a kid, there was a movie, because there is a movie about it too,
mm-hmm.
but like there was a VHS of like kid songs.
Yep.
Right?
And it's horrifying. And
yeah, maybe it was kid songs.
Yeah,
maybe.
I mean, or from the 60s or whatever. It's like the Monster Mash in that one always, right?
And well, yeah, and they showed it flying and doing the, like, you know, doing the thing that it does in the movie where it's just the eye above them flying, right?
Yep.
And it's like, oh shit. That sounds right. You know what I mean? Like, that makes perfect sense to me.
I want to go back now and see about that black and if it is in the same time as the original, as the film, as that first film. I wonder if they did that.
Yeah.
That design, I mean, that design was just off the charts. So here's a question for you. Besides the alien, like it being a creature, at the end, and here's total spoiler territory, is OJ alive or dead?
I think OJ at the end is alive.
Okay. Why do you think that? Just because they show him and he's on horseback?
I think they show him on horseback, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think they also go out of their way to show he is the only person that him, Angel, and Em are the only three people that seem to actively respect this thing. Mm-hmm. Even the filmmaker guy ends up getting killed because he's like, I need the perfect shot or whatever. And it's like, all right, what do you got to do?
Well, I think they alluded character. Pretty heavily that he had cancer, but he was dying anyways.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so, you know, it was, I think it was like, I think it makes more sense if he lives at the end.
Really. See, right? I think he was dead. And what she was seeing was kind of what she wanted to see. But again, it kind of fits back to the idea of the Western cowboy. Right.
Yeah.
He's in the distance. It's a little grainy. Right. And he's on his horse. And I think he gives her the eye symbol, or just, he doesn't do anything. He doesn't move. To me, mm-hmm. I think that he was killed.
Well, you know, yeah, that's another point. He mentions, OJ mentions to his sister when she's like, well, what did you see? When he first says it, he's like, is there a word for a bad miracle?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And when Joop is looking at Gordy killing the people, mm-hmm. the bad miracle he sees is the shoe standing on its end.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And maybe for her, the bad miracle she sees is him on the horse, but he's actually dead. Because actually, that's what happens to OJ when he sees his dad at first.
Yep.
Is the dad is still just sitting there on the horse looking normal.
Right. He's right. Upright. Yep.
So, yeah, you know, you might be right, Marie.
I'm thinking, I mean, it's worth a rewatch. It's worth thinking about, right?
Definitely worth a rewatch.
It's, yeah. To me, again, like, it is an awesome film. And so as my de facto defunct now conduit to the UFO community, I'm sorry, the UAP community.
Thank you, Marie.
What do you think they thought about this?
Oh, I don't think a single one of them watched it.
Really?
Are you kidding me? No, some of them did. Ryan Sprague reached out. I don't really consider it. That's the thing, right?
Well, he's legit. He's more legit. Did he like it?
He liked it a lot. Yeah. Anybody who is worth listening to about UFO stuff, I don't consider to be part of the UFO community.
That's true.
I consider that to be people like, you know, Eric Davis and Lou Elizondo and Chris Mellon and all those yakos, right? Like,
yeah.
Commentators or whatever. Like, I don't really consider them to be part of that same crowd, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I would be surprised if, I guess they probably did watch it. I really think this, again, I love the idea of like hubris in mm-hmm. the face of the amazing
mm-hmm.
being something that like karmically goes against you. Right. You know, yeah.
Your analogy, like, with the Skinwalker Ranch is 100% perfect.
God shows himself to Moses on the mountaintop.
Right.
And Moses is like, chill there for a little bit. I'm going to go get the tribe and we're going to turn this into one hell of a show. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like that. That is like, again, it's exploitation of something that you should have, if not reverence for, at least respect for, you know?
Yeah. You should learn so, about learning that lesson. I think you're right.
It is. Like, yeah. And all of his,
learn it.
All of his movies have kind of a fairy tale feel to them where there mm-hmm. is a lesson, I think, embedded in them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
that's what I love about him in horror too. Right.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel like by the time you're done watching his first horror with Get Out, it's a terrifying movie and it's a even more brutal racial commentary, but you get that hits all the perfect notes, especially with the ending. And you don't, that's the beautiful thing about horror movies. I think science fiction in general is you end up getting a lesson from it without knowing that it's being taught if it's really good.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know? And I think too, that's one of the things that's so interesting, right? Like the best horror I think does have.
Yeah.
Aspects of like not moralizing, but fairy tale like lessons embedded in them. You know what I mean? Like just yeah. like, you know, oh, like yeah. the Saw movies are just sort of like gore and horror for horror's yeah. sake. And that's fun and like cool and whatever. Right. But like you give me like a Friday the 13th where like, you know, you shouldn't have pushed that kid in the ocean or the lake rather.
Right. Right. Or
that to me
yeah.
hits better. You know yeah. what I mean? Really a Hellraiser where it's like, shouldn't have fucked with the thing you didn't understand, right? That to me, like, I don't know. It just viscerally hits better.
Well, it's the difference, and I think we've talked about between horror and terror, right? Yes. I think horror is like the porn cult, you know, is body terror and sort of the Cronenberg shit and the Saw, you know, and it's like, which is, or torture porn, right? Which is great. But like, I think movies that are terrifying reach you on a different psychological level. Like, you know, we talked about Hereditary, which to me is like, still can't watch. Like, it just is horrifying. And it's about like your parents and like, are you going to become your parents kind of thing?
You know? I watch that movie literally like every 3 months, Marie. It's like one of my favorite horror movies of all time.
It is. And it's because so it, again, it is just so, it's just so, yeah. Right. Just so well done. And so stuff like that to me, and this is like one of them as well, is like, it's funny. It has humor, but it's like, by the time you're done watching it, you're like, oh man, like, there is something you take away with it that is still kind of just claws at the back of your head. And to me, that's what terror is. It's a good instinct, right? It's still triggering your fight or flight response. Like, you're still responding to it and you're not just like, oh, that was fun. And then you forget about it.
Yeah, it is. It is funny though, too. Like, it's funny. I was having this discussion with a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. Minkus is what his nickname is. We're playing Rocket League and talking about this movie. And he kind of was like, when he first saw it, he was like, I didn't really get it at first. He was like, I kept looking for like a lot, like a much deeper meaning to it. He was like, and then when I was like, you know what, this is just like a really good monster movie. He was like, I got it. And I liked it a lot better, you know? And like, of course we talked about like deeper meanings and whatever, but really, I think at the end of the day, it kind of is just like a classic monster movie where it's like,
it's good.
You see the monster, you show hubris in the face of this monster, this creature, mm-hmm. or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, you get King Kong, you try to control King Kong, and then goes bad, right? Like, it is bad. Really like a classic monster movie kind of thing. It's so good.
Yeah. It's also like Jaws, right? Like, they don't show.
Yes.
They
that don't was show his it. Other point. He was like, it's Jaws.
It's
yeah.
Jaws. It's Jaws.
It's Jaws, but
it,
scarier because
music. Yeah, but man, when they show it, you're like, oh shit, get out of there, Em.
You know, the thing about Jaws, though, too, is like, we shouldn't be in the water anyways as humans, like most of the time. So like, that's not that scary. Just stay out of the water.
Well, it's my whole take on Australia still, right? Stay out of Australia. Australia. Just what the hell? Of course it's going to kill you. Of course it's going to kill you, man.
The other day, Katie and I were talking about places we want to go, you know, and I was like, I'd love to go to Australia. And she was like, why? Spiders. And I was like, come on.
Not just spiders. I mean, snails. I mean, giant birds.
That's awesome. I mean,
come on,
I want to see
like,
that stuff.
There's nothing in Australia that wants to see you live.
And then she showed me a TikTok where it's like this lady is at her office and she's like, you know, she's like, oh, I got a little friend today. And she moves the thing back and it's this like foot long fucking spider thing.
I mean, yeah, the huntsman, like, the giant huntsman. Yeah. What the fuck?
And she's like, just going to keep an eye on him while I'm working. And Katie was like, get out of the house, burn it down.
I know. Quit the job. Like, what the hell is that?
What are you doing? Run. Oh, run.
PTSD. All right. All right. Anyway, so if you haven't watched it, dear listeners,
please watch it. So good.
Watch it. Excellent.
So good. All right, Marie. Well, good times to your listeners. Thanks for listening to this fun bonus episode of the Mad Scientist Podcast. We'll be back next week with a full episode. Thank you again, dear listeners, for listening to the Mad Scientist Podcast. I have been your host, Chris Cogswell, joined by my co-host,
Marie Mayhew.
If you'd like to contact the show, please send us an email at themadscientistpodcast@gmail.com. That's all one word. You can also follow us on Twitter at Mad Scientist Pod or at Team Giant Squid for Marie. And of course, you can see us on Facebook, on Instagram, and all over the internet as the Mad Scientist Podcast. And again, our logo is the one with the pumpkin head, so it's easy to see.
Mm-hmm.
If you've enjoyed the show tonight, please consider supporting us on Patreon, where the money that you give to us will help us to promote this show further, to make it better, and just to spend more time making it.
Because we love doing that.
We do love doing that. Our logo was designed by Carrie Shaheen. Our web design is done by Desdemona Howard.
Woohoo!
And our sound design is done by Jake Cardinal. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you. This has been a Damn It Chippy production.
Welcome to Anthology of Heroes, the podcast that explores the most pivotal moments of history through the eyes of those who lived it. In this podcast, we don't spend our time recounting facts and dates. Instead, we follow in the footsteps of national heroes, kings, or ordinary people who lived and breathed the moments that shaped our world. We're not hemmed in by eras, borders, or religions. Instead, we seek out the tales of those who defied the odds and fought passionately for their beliefs. Whether they're right or wrong is up to you to decide. From Vercingetorix's doomed rebellion against Rome, to Osceola's unshakable war against the USA, all the way up to the inspiring Sobibor concentration camp uprising in World War II, each episode is an immersive listening experience, blending music and sound effects to really draw you into the story. Our episodes go for about 45 minutes, making them perfect for your commute, and are crafted using a wealth of historical sources, which I list on our website if you want to learn more. I'm the host, Elliot Gates, and I'm thrilled to have you joining me as we uncover history's hidden gems and illuminate the faded pages of our past. Look out for the Anthology of Heroes podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, or anywhere else you get your podcasts from.